is the last day to register to vote in the state of Oregon for this year's elections. But if you're like me, you might have struggled with the value of taking what some might say is our country's most sacred responsibility as a citizen. In my youth, I struggled with the value of the vote. I was informed. I knew the history of African Americans, women, and other disenfranchised folks, and what it took for them to get the right to cast their ballots and participate in American politics, but I just didn't believe that it made any difference. I wasn't alone. Statsbrain.com, let's call it statisticbrain.com, states that only 57.5% of Americans voted in the 2012 election. Political science scientists attribute discrimination and other factors to the reason, lack of education, socioeconomic status, and the one that hamstrung yours truly, a lack of belief in government to enact social change, prevent folk from voting. And so after a sobering conversation with my mother that involved a reminder of my history as a black person in America and the few scathing looks that only a mother can give a son, I changed my behavior and took on the responsibility of those that came before me. And I haven't missed an election since. But do you vote? Do you think your vote counts? My guests and I today will take on the value of voting and the intersectionality of history, marginalization, and changing landscape of legislation in our present and future America today on The Keenest Observers. I'd like to welcome a few guests today. We have Judge Timothy Gerking from the Jackson County Circuit Court, 1st Judicial District. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And joining us in a bit will be California Civil Rights Attorney Charnell James. Nope, they're not going to be here. Okay.
No, I'll be here.
Oh, you're here. Welcome. Yeah. Good to see
you. I made it.
great. Sometimes the connections are fun, so good to have you here. I think we'll start there. So was I alone, folks, in my pessimism as a youth in terms of the vote and participation? What's been your experience in interacting in your given arenas?
Well, I'll take the lead on this. I'm sure with his honors education and background, as attorneys, we kind of look at things a little bit differently. Ordinances and elections have such a critical role in everything that we do that it tends to be more important to us. But my children and I have had the same conversation your parents had with you. And we have a blended family, and so I have been speaking with my kids multiple times about the importance of them getting out and voting and making a difference and shaping their government, because it matters from your local county jurisdictions and your city jurisdictions and your day-to-day living all the way up through a presidential election to participate and to have a say in what's going on. In addition, I was a Marine, and so I fought for this country, and it's important to me that I stay involved in what goes on. So trying to get that to the younger generation is very, very important. And I think that most of the younger generation feels like you did, where why does my vote matter? And I think that that's a perception we, as you know, as an aging generation, need to make sure the younger generation understands you need to be involved.
How do we do that? Judge Kidding, do you have a Gherkin?
Let me just contribute to that question. I think it's unfortunate that we don't have someone else on the panel that you know shares your background, Robert, because I kind of come from a similar background that our other guest has. You know, I came from a more or less a privileged background in terms of being raised by parents who were highly educated and strongly believed in education for their children. And so it just was I was expected to vote. And I just took on that responsibility naturally. It was just something that I knew that I needed to do. And after voting, I felt good about voting. Even though my candidate may not have won, I never had that feeling that my vote didn't count. But there are a lot of folks and I'm speaking of those in Jackson County, who don't feel the same way that I do. I think there's a lot of folks out there who feel hopeless and disenfranchised to some extent. These are the folks who are either unemployed or underemployed, or uneducated or undereducated. I'm aware that there's a very high percentage of folks who suffer from various spectrums of mental illness. And the people who have been trapped in the drug culture in Southern Oregon, which is a very serious problem that we face in our courts, those are the folks who have that hopelessness, and like it's would be, they just don't have that same feeling that I do in terms of having that responsibility to vote. And I would be remiss if I did not include the Hispanic community. You know, I know there's a lot of them don't speak and read English, and it's a challenging process to vote. We've all seen our voter pamphlet. I mean, it's like a telephone directory.
Yeah, it's very extensive. Very extensive.
Yeah,
we're talking.
It's daunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is a challenge for folk to get through, especially if folk don't feel like their voices are heard. I grew up with the responsibility as well, but I know that part of my challenge was feeling like the government wasn't responsive to my voice. And we'll get into that on the next part of the hour. I'm talking to Judge Timothy Keating and civil rights attorney Charnell James, and we'll continue the conversation of the value of the vote when we return to the Keenest Observers. Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin. We're talking about the value of the vote in America. You're welcome to join this conversation. Call us at 800-838-3760 or email comments and questions to jx@jeffnet.org. I'm talking to Judge Timothy Gerken and Attorney Charnell James, and we were talking about historic barriers to voting and why some groups may engage in the vote and some may not. And Judge Gerken was talking about the responsibility of folk who kind of engage in the vote. I know I had that background as well. I was definitely schooled on the value of voting and the history of the Voting Rights Act for my particular community as an African-American and the community at large. But Attorney James, what's been your experience in terms of historic barriers in terms of folk getting out to vote in Jackson County, Oregon, as well as the California area that you serve currently?
Well, I actually grew up in Siskiyou County and went to college in Jackson County.
Okay.
So I'm familiar with both areas. And I would think, just with my own experience, it's really lack of information and lack of feeling like government has an effect on what you're doing. For me in Siskiyou County as a teenager, you know, we watched an entire economy be decimated because of a spotted owl, and no say on how jobs were going away, no say in what was going on. And I remember as a teenager and turning 18 and feeling like, well, what can I do? And part of that is what brought on, my desire to be a lawyer and to make a difference and make a change. But there are lots of people, my siblings included, that it really took a lot for my mom to go, no, you have to still participate. So I think that historically people are almost excluded from local effects. And when you're excluded locally, there's no way that you can feel like you participate statewide or even nationwide politics. And I think that one of the things that needs to change is people's perception and activity as far as what it goes with local politics and staying involved in your community. I think that that is the only way to overcome those barriers. Because if you don't feel the effects locally, if you don't feel like what you say matters or what matters to you matters locally, which is your day-to-day effect, there's no way that you can feel that statewide or nationwide those policies will affect you.
Right. And then I think you also worked on campaigns in those communities, as well as the community that you live in California, on some specific discrimination issues and inhibition issues as well. Can you talk about those, or inhibiting citizens from voting?
Right. Well, currently we are in the process of litigation against Siskiyou County because of another firm, not my firm, is doing the voter disenfranchise, but I'm working on another lawsuit against the county for discrimination against the Hmong community. And I think that this is consistent that you see across the board in different, whether it's been Hispanics, which have been excluded and pushed away down here in Yuba County, where my office is at, which is a couple hours away from Siskiyou County. There have been issues in Yuba and Sutter with discrimination against the East Indian population. And there has been a history of discrimination against specific races. And currently, there is a major problem in Northern California with discrimination against the Hmong community. And again, I think that what Judge Birkin said was correct, is that everything is done in English, and it's a phone book, and it's hard to get that information out to voters. And if they don't understand what they're voting on, or they don't feel that they can go or they feel safe to go and vote, then you're not going to have the turnout that you need.
Mm-hmm. Judge Gerken, how do you think that the mail-only election policy has helped maybe mitigate the challenges that you spoke of and that Attorney James is speaking of now, or has it?
I am surprised, or I continue to be surprised, that Oregon is the only, or one of the only, states in the country that allows for vote by mail, because it is so easy to vote. You don't have to get in your car or walk a distance to a polling place where you vote. You simply wait in the mail for your ballot to come in. You fill it out, and then you give it back to the mailman, and you vote it. The challenge, of course, is to understand what you're voting for. Everybody is pretty much lined up in the presidential election, who are they going to vote for, Hillary or Donald Trump? But after that, it becomes very confusing. Pardon me?
Or an independent party candidate.
Exactly. Exactly. A third party candidate. Yeah. But after that, it becomes very confusing and complicated. Just as an example, I understood that we were going to be talking to some extent on marijuana legislation. That's one of the reasons why our pamphlet has turned into a telephone book, because of the it's like every small community or every community in Jackson County has drafted their own ordinance to either prohibit the retail sale of recreational marijuana or to impose a sales tax. And it's kind of it's kind of complex and confusing. You go through each one of these and figure out what each city wants to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're talking to
Judge. So even though it's relatively easy to vote, it's, again, the challenge is understanding what you're voting for.
Right, right. We'll get into that in a second. I just want to remind the folks out in the radio sphere that we're talking to Attorney Charnell James and Judge Timothy Gerkins. Let's get into that a little second. Let's get into how legalization issues affect voter apathy or turnout. Is this an issue that you find that people in the California and Oregon communities are interested in, therefore show their energy, you know, to their legislators or to you all here affects in your courtrooms or in your offices?
Well, I'm as a judge, I am, well, as a judge and by nature, I'm apolitical. I'm not a political person, and I can't be political in the courtroom. I have to maintain that objectivity and neutrality, and so I don't engage in politics. But in going through the voters' pamphlet, it's just unbelievable that the myriad number of pieces of marijuana legislation. And so I had to go back and figure out how we got here. And, you know, ballot measure 91 back in 2014 was passed by the voters in the state of Oregon, which authorized the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to license recreational marijuana producers and retailers. However, each city and each county in the state of Oregon can adopt ordinances prohibiting any of those licensees from operating in the city or in an unincorporated area of a county, but the ordinance that they pass must be referred to the voters in a statewide general election. So that's what these various counties and cities are doing. They passed ordinances prohibiting the retail sale of recreational marijuana, in some cases medical marijuana, or imposing a tax, but they're required to present it to the voters. Hmm. So if you live in one of these small, if you live in a city in Southern Oregon, you know, don't assume that, you know, next week you can go down to your corner store and buy recreational marijuana. You need to look at the, at your voter's pamphlet and see what your city intends to do. Are they allowing the sale of recreational marijuana, or are they trying to prohibit it? And if it is allowed, are they going to impose a 3% sales tax on those sales?
Attorney James, has the legalization issue been a challenge or been an issue of franchise in California?
Oh, absolutely. Considering we were the first state that passed medical marijuana 20 years ago, and it has taken us 20 years to have a viable legislation on the ballot for this year for us to go recreational as well. It is a huge impact of what I see here in California right now, almost as big of an issue as water rights in California, I would say, if not third to water rights in California. Part of what I have been working on this year, I actually have ordinances on two jurisdictions that are going for the November 8th election. I have two jurisdictions that have an ordinances that I wrote that go for special elections in March. I'm working on a number of different campaigns in Southern California as well for legislation that has to do with land use. When it comes to recreational or medical marijuana use, and in California, there has been a huge disconnect between what the people generally want, what the local governments want, and what the state is trying to do. And so there comes a point where there is a huge disconnect between voters and voter intentions in California.
What do you attribute? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I contributed to a small group of percentage of people that try to control what a large majority of people in the county do. I think that it's admirable that in Oregon they're putting these things on the ballot and making a majority vote make the choice, because down here what we're seeing almost exclusively is, you know, 5-member city council or 7-member board of supervisors that are making the decisions for a large amount of their population that is in support of it, and they are banning or restricting to a point of making it impractical in California for land use regulations, as far as that goes.
And that circles
in Oregon. It's basically an opt out. So even though the voters back in 2014 voted in favor of decriminalizing marijuana and allowing possession of marijuana and the retail sale of recreational marijuana, each city and county can opt out of that and prohibit it.
And so
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and so it seems like there's a values and a value argument going on. And I guess that's what I mean by there are community values that are being batted around between populations, and then there's a value of whether or not folk seem to have an appreciation for a particular issue like legalization.
Yeah, I think that's one way to look at it. Yeah, I think that's an accurate way to present the controversy.
So what's the reconciliation?
The question of values.
Mm-hmm. What's the reconciliation? Is this, you know, you all hear, I mean, you all aren't legislators, but you do hear and then play a role in some sort of advocacy in the process. What's the reconciliation of the legalization argument? And is it about putting the issue to another kind of vote?
Actually, I'm going to take this one.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think because I do both the political side and the legal side of things, I really feel like at this point we almost are reliant on the court systems to step in and say, you know, you small handful of people do not get to control what a majority vote is in your county. When, you know, we had an election in Yuba County where one jurisdiction voted strongly against a land use regulation, and the other 4 districts voted strongly for it. But because their percentage of voters are higher, they got to have control of what everybody else wanted. And the numbers were very close, but because it's one district that motivated and got 80% of the voters out, they took control over what the other 4 districts wanted to do. And so it's things like that where you don't necessarily have the will of all the people in the district or all of the people within the area that are being addressed. Had the Board of Supervisors listened to their districts, it would have been a 4-to-1 vote, and the legislation would have been done through the Board of Supervisors where it should have been done, where it's, you know, each district gets an equal vote in what's being said, and that isn't the way that it's handled in any form, in any state. And so you have to have some level of accountability. I think that a general wide election works to the extent that it allows more people to have a say in what's going on. But the other part of it is that you have to have people believe that if they go and put their vote out on November 8th, that vote actually will make a difference.
Right. There are some specific, definite psychological effects of feeling like your vote doesn't matter.
Exactly.
I see. We have a email response really quickly before we go to break. Joe and Talent says, Trump makes the point that the election fix is in. He's correct, but not for the reasons he says. Gerrymandering and voter suppression measures in Republican states is the real, quote, fix, end quote. This is what keeps Republicans in office. And the only reason you see Republican officials pushing back on his accusations is that we could see more investigations into what they admit they are doing on the state levels and start to lose their hold on the process.
I'm an optimist. I firmly believe in our in our form of government, our democracy, our form of our elections. I think they're essentially fair. I'm sure there's some bad behavior occurring across the country in terms of manipulating votes and so forth. But I think basically it's a fair process. And even Marco Rubio, I think it was yesterday, pushed back on Trump's accusations of the system being rigged by stating that in Florida it ain't rigged. I mean, how can you possibly rig individual precincts across a state or across a country?
And I would agree with His Honor. I don't, there, it's, I think that that is a scare tactic to disenfranchise voters, really, if you want the truth.
Yeah, there, I think you're right.
It's, you know, if you keep hearing in the media that your vote doesn't matter, eventually you're going to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to stop that behavior. That that cannot happen in the United States.
I hadn't seen it that way, but that's exactly what Trump may be trying to do.
Let's
demoralize a certain faction of voters and just get them to think, hey, it's not going to make any difference anyway whether I vote or not.
Yeah, we'll continue that right after the break. I'm Robert Goodwin. Our guests are Attorney Charnell James, Judge Timothy Gerken, and we're talking about the value of the vote in America. First, a short break. Stick with us. We're back with the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange and the Keenest Observers. I'm Robert Goodwin here with Attorney Charnell James, who works on civil liberties issues, and Judge Timothy Gerkens. We were talking about disenfranchisement issues in voting, and you're welcome to join this conversation. Call us at 800-838-3760 or email comments and questions to jx@jeffnet.org. Very curious comments at the beginning part of the last, the end part of the last segment, in terms of what could inhibit folk from going to the polls and voting on issues that concern them. It sounds like a reiteration, but the effects of putting out particular information that may turn folk away is a historical thing that we've done in this country. Sad to say, it boggles the mind that we're still talking about this in 2016 when the Voting Rights Act, happened in the mid 60s. What does that say about how far we've come and how far we have to go?
Well, I think that, first of all, Judge Gerken had to get off. He got called into his courtroom, so it's you're just stuck with me now. But just part of that conversation is that needs to continue to happen is that the focus has changed. You know, when my parents and my mother was part of that movement for, changing the vote and making things different and getting that vote out there, there's a lot of difference between allowing people to vote and having them have a say in it and the problem we face today, which is, everyone can vote, but does that vote really matter? And I think that that's the conversation that needs to be had, is that your vote does matter. And the perfect example of it is in your local government. You can put on your own ballot measures. You have a right as a citizen of the United States to collect signatures from your neighbors and put the legislation that you want on the ballot. And I was down in Laguna Beach, and we were dealing with an issue, with a voter initiative down in Laguna Beach that the city council was trying to put a competing measure on the ballot for. And one of the things that they said was, Well, the problem with having voter initiatives is that that's bad legislation, and I had to stop them and correct them and say, no, that's exactly why we want it. We want that ability to have people to have a say that this is the rule they want to live by, not what you interpret they want to live by, but what they actually want to live by. And people need to be reminded of that you do have that power.
Right. A reminder that voting is a part of the process, and then action and activity is another part of that process, and that it isn't like an action that you stop on. You have to continue to the next part of the process in order to inform legislators and legislation. Yeah, I think that's something that we forget, that I know I forgot it, and that was what kind of keyed me in when my mother gave me the crazy look, when I was 19, is that this is a part of the process, and then you have to go and work on a particular issue or be a part of the process in order to inform, your governmental leaders on what they need to be working on for you.
Well, one of the things that that I definitely encourage to my clients and to people that I work with in the community is that every single city council and every single board of supervisor, whether in Southern Oregon or California, has not only their agendas posted online, but they have their minutes of what happened at their meeting. So you don't necessarily need to sit through a six-hour city council meeting to see what's going on with your county or your city. You can read the minutes. They happen usually twice a month. It's not that large of a time investment for you to get on there, look and see what's going on in your community. And if there's an issue that affects you, then go and talk about it. Get involved. And you'll see that election is being someone that's allowed to vote in the United States is not a two-day event. It is a 365-day event.
Right,
and it's something you have to be consistently engaged in.
Most definitely, most definitely. I want to go back to the legalization issue in terms of marijuana and get your take on how the country most definitely is going to reconcile state and local legislation with other states that have folk in prison for the same quote-unquote offenses, that one population will be able to make significant money, but another part of the population is in jail for the same action and the reconciliation of the law. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that that's probably the biggest reason on why this specific issue needs to be looked at more closely at the federal level as well as the state levels. Right now, there are 30 out of the 52 states, and there are 36, I want to say, that have some type of regulation. Everything from allowing oil consumption, manufacturing consumption, all the way up to recreational. 36 states. That's a significant number of states that are saying, hey, we don't agree that you think that this plant is more dangerous than heroin, and you need to take a look at it. When the Surgeon General comes out and says, when the U.S. Surgeon General comes out and says that there are plausible medical uses for marijuana and that it needs to be studied, and when the FDA actually has a page dedicated as an alternative medicine choice to medical marijuana and to cannabis, that's time for the federal government to go, you know what, maybe we should stop focusing so heavily on this and change our position. Because I think there is a difference. And I'm not going to say that every conviction has to do with just strictly marijuana, but if it did, those sentences need to be changed immediately. Ones that are involving other problems or, other dangers to society, then those ones need to stand where they're at. But I think that when you have a government that is absolutely ignoring what they're seeing from medical tests and studies in Europe and things that are being done in the United States and treatment of veterans, and you're ignoring that, I think that there's a problem. When you have 22 suicides a day of veterans, and there's a proven treatment that allows them to get better sleep and deal with their post-traumatic stress disorder and helps reduce suicides, but you refuse to give them access to that medication because you feel it's worse than heroin, there's a problem. And we have to address, as a populace, not only our local governments, but really put pressure on our state representatives and our federal government to stand up and follow the will of the people.
Right, right. I want to continue this part of the conversation, but encourage our listeners to call in. Do you vote? Answer whether or not you believe your vote counts on measures like Attorney James and I are talking about in terms of legalization issues, all kinds of rights issues, and tell me if you believe that your vote counts in these issues and what are the things that you can do to adjust and make them count if you don't believe that they do. Attorney James, what's the governmental impediment? What's the federal impediment? Again, are we going back to this value and values argument, or are we stuck in, you know, the previous century in terms of the negative view on the plant and what it does to communities?
I think it's a combination of both. I think that as a government, we have moved from being a government to the people to a more parentalistic government that tells us what we should and shouldn't do as far as morally. You know, here, you can't get a job here, we'll take care of you. If, you know, we'll pay your bills, we'll feed you, we'll protect you from everything that's going on. We'll keep these things from you. We'll regulate what you do in your home. And all of those things go beyond what the Constitution was intended for. The Constitution was set up for a way for a society to grow as an independent society and to live together in harmony and to prosper, not in place to parent an entire country. And I think that needs to switch. That shifting from, you know, the 1920s and 1930s, when we needed help because the country was so decimated from the Great Depression, to where we are today, where we're being hindered and there's a lack of growth because the government is too focused on stopping what we choose to do in our own lives.
We have a comment, Devin in Mount Chester. You're on the air.
Hi. Actually, it's Kevin, but that's fine.
Oh, Kevin.
I'm enjoying your program, and I'm a 65-year-old retired guy, and listening to, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, the male host there, describing how his, when he was a youth and was very, very much disinterested in doing anything at all to support the country, and, you know, I was very similar. And but I've gotten to the point now where I feel really the problem with voters is that they're just not very empowered. They don't tend to think of themselves as, hey, these guys work for us. And if they don't do a good job, then I want to get them out of there. I think if every citizen began to actually feel the power that they have, which comes with becoming a citizen, which I did in 2005, I felt like I joined a, you know, I'm investing in this big thing, and I got a stake in it. And I'm like almost a shareholder in a huge corporation or something, and my voice means something. And I need the people that I've hired to manage my country to do a good job and actually hold the bond between the citizen and them is to be somewhat of a sacred thing rather than just doing what they do. Anyway, that's how I feel about it.
Thanks for your comment, Kevin.
Sure.
I think, you know, sometimes a challenge is the belief that we're a part of the whole. And I think, you know, when over the years different segments of the population aren't in equitable positions, or when we see some of the, you know, the actions in terms of civil rights and police, or if we see some of the economic issues and, you know, the 1%, or, you know, just not feeling a part of, it makes our citizenry, like, react. for the better or worse. And that can be problematic, regardless of your point of view. The body politic is alive, and, you know, government is a living thing. And I think that sometimes we forget that.
I agree with that.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. We don't have much time left, but I do want to get into really quickly, and maybe in the next minute or so, about how you think the disparity in race and the prison system affects this issue of legalization and voting. Really briefly, if you can do that in a whole 45 seconds,
let me see if I can sum it up in 45 seconds. I think that race discrimination when it comes to drug enforcement, especially marijuana crimes, is so incredibly out of balance that is something that we should be concerned about as a citizenry. That when all minority races get stricter and stronger punishments than white defendants get, I think we have a problem. And I think that there has to be part of having Measure 64, which in California, which is not my most favorite piece of legislation ever written, but the thing that why I support it and why I'm voting for it is that it decriminalizes. And it gives us the ability to go back and empty out some of our prisons that are overburdened with a majority of minority people from crimes that are ridiculous. Cultivating marijuana should not be a felony crime.
Thank you
very much.
And that's
something too important.
Appreciate you being here, Attorney Sharnell James. Also want to thank Judge Timothy Gerken for being here as well. We have much to dig on this, and maybe we'll continue it at another time.